This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We usually tape in the offices of Raider, but today we're taping at my home. But I do want to thank Raider, a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank, our premier sponsor. They support our community in so many ways, and their dynamic team is committed to serving the banking needs of clients in this region and throughout the southeastern United States. Iberia Bank offers the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit IberiaBank.com for more information. The generosity of Lafayette General Health also makes this podcast possible. Lafayette General has been a leader in telemedicine. With the Health Anywhere app, your family can access quality urgent care at any time without an appointment, all from the comfort of your home. It's the waiting room redefined. Download the app today at lghealthanywhere.com. Our guest today is Marilyn Castle, Chief Judge of the 15th Judicial District Court. Judge Castle received her Juris Doctorate from LSU in 1976 and then served early in her career as an assistant DA. From 1979 until her election to the bench in November 1998, Judge Castle was engaged in a litigation practice focused primarily in the areas of business and commercial litigation. She has served as president of the Lafayette Parish Bar Association and is active in her community, both at Asbury United Methodist Church and the Bonaparte Mardi Gras Crew, and I'm sure in other things we'll talk about later. We're here today to discuss the shutdown of the courthouse in Lafayette due to the COVID-19 pandemic and how the court system has operated with limited public traffic. The court reopened May 18th at a 25% limitation on capacity. Jury trials are still on hold until June 30th, according to a directive from the Louisiana Supreme Court. Judge Marilyn Castle, welcome to Discover Lafayette. Thank you for joining us.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So, Marilyn, I just have to disclose, I'm a fan of yours. We know each other from church, from Mardi Gras, and just from being in the community, and you serve our community. I've been very proud of you what you've done to make our courthouse operate well. And I know you told me you've served in past emergency situations. So I'm assuming this current pandemic, while it's a horrible thing to go through, you've experienced some problems in the past in your leadership.
Well, actually, we were a little bit better prepared because we were not, I think, as well prepared when Katrina and Rita came. And that happened to be another time when I was serving as chief judge. And so we really sort of had to devise a new game plan. And although we were not shut down as a courthouse long term, as other courts were, we did have issues with inmates in different facilities and trying to locate them and trying to deal with attorneys from other parts of the state that were displaced. And of course, our courthouse in Vermilion was closed because of Rita. So we did a lot of learning during that time, and that made us, I think, better prepared for this when it came along. Although, you know, you're never quite fully prepared, but I think we were a little bit better prepared.
Who would have foreseen what we're going through now? And I know you mentioned to me that actually in Lafayette Parish, our prisoners are well situated, that we have not had a pandemic outbreak.
The sheriff has done a great job. But one thing that he did, and he did it very early, was that he made the decision to close off the jail facility from any outside traffic. And so if a new arrestee has to come in, they are quarantined for 14 days before they go into the general population to prevent anyone coming in with COVID and then spreading it. And he anybody that goes into the jail, I went over the other day to have a court proceeding. They take your temperature, you know, they ask you the questions about whether you are at risk. So he's done a very good job. And because of that, we have not had an outbreak at all in our jail.
That's great.
We have not been bringing any inmates out of the facility. So all of the court proceedings that we have been having involving inmates have been done by video, which has been very helpful in keeping the exposure down. And those limited matters that we cannot do by video, we are set up to where the judge can go to the jail and be behind a glass enclosure, and the inmate can be on the other side of it, and the judge can actually be present, although when I've done it, I'm the only one there. Everybody else is on video. So my court reporter and all the attorneys are on video. But under law for certain proceedings, for instance, when you sentence someone, that has to be done in person, cannot be done by video.
Oh.
So I've gone over there to impose sentence, but I'm the only one physically there with the inmate, and everybody else is on video. So, but of course, I'm not really in physical contact with them because of the glass. And so that way, they really have been very careful about trying to prevent, and they've been successful in preventing any of the COVID virus from getting into the jail facility.
Do you know, Marilyn, if the prisoners, are they all wearing masks? You wear a mask, I guess, when you come in? Like, what does it look like in the jail?
Well, and they are separated by pods. So, you don't have everybody in the jail exposed to everybody else. And so, for instance, when we do certain procedures by video, we may have maybe 18 or 20 inmates we have to talk to that day, but they bring them down by pod. So you may only get two or three at a time. And when they come into the little courtroom area, although they're on video and we're not there, they're all wearing masks. So, I mean, they're very careful.
And that's good, because I'm sure they're scared too, just like the rest of us.
Right, right.
So what is the courthouse like right now? Is it empty? Like, what's going on in the courthouse? We're here on May, 21st?
Right.
What's
this is our
on?
First week. Yeah, this is our first week where we actually are letting the public in from March the 20th until this past Monday the 18th. Everything was being done by video except for emergency hearings. So we had some in-person hearings on, for instance, the juvenile matters where children have been removed from their parents. Those are emergency hearings. So those were still being done in person. And we still had some in-person juvenile criminal proceedings that were still going forward. And people who were seeking protective orders were being allowed in. But that was it. And everything else was being done by video. And actually, it worked pretty well, because we kind of got one day notice that everything was being shut down. We didn't get a whole lot of notice. And in one day, we were able to scramble around and make sure everybody had laptops to take home, that everybody was connected. All of our office phones in the judge's offices were forwarded on, so that our assistants were receiving those calls from their homes. So, and we have the ability to connect by the internet to obtain records from both the Lafayette and the Acadia clerk's offices. And that was very helpful. So everybody continued to work from home, but we're not able to have any in-court, in-person proceedings.
Okay.
And so that backed up a lot of things. We missed a lot of criminal court dates because of that. And one thing that I hope the public will do, and hopefully anybody that listens to this podcast will know, is that if anybody missed a criminal court date between March 20th and when we reopened on May 18th, they are due to come back next week to receive reservice of their summons. And so, we realize that those people didn't miss because they were ignoring our order to come.
Right.
They missed because we weren't here. But they do have the obligation to come back and to receive notice of, the new date that they've been set. So we have asked that people do that, and we're asking that they come on a date based on the first letter of their last name, so that we don't have such huge crowds. So people that have last names beginning with the letter A through I are asked to come on May 26th, which would be next Tuesday. Okay. Right. On then J through Q on May 27th, which is the Wednesday, and then R through Z on May 28th, which would be the Thursday.
So they drive up to the courthouse and appear?
Well, the way it's set up now is we have two large tents on the east main side of the courthouse. And those tents are there to for people to be able to wait while they're waiting for either to come up to the courthouse, which I'll talk about in a little bit, those that are coming in, or to be reserved. And the clerk is reserving out of a building. It's at the annex, which is on the opposite side from the courthouse on East Main. So they just need to walk up to the outside East Main side and tell there are a lot of bailiffs out there and law enforcement personnel out there, and they'll direct them to the service desk, and they'll go to the service desk and they'll get the notice for the new court date. So it doesn't take very long. You just you come up, you know, you walk up, you know, depending on how many are in line, you may have to wait a few minutes to get your summons, and then you know the people are free to go.
These are people mainly that have a criminal summons, or is this anyone?
Right. This would be just for criminal or traffic. So we missed a lot of weeks of misdemeanor. We missed and a lot of weeks of felony. So it would be either somebody that was due for an arraignment, somebody that was due for a pretrial, somebody that was due for a trial, somebody that was due for a rule to show payment of fine, somebody that was due for revocation. Any of those criminal matters that were set between March the 20th and May 18th, those are the people that have to come on the dates that I just mentioned.
Okay.
To get reservice so that they can have a new court date.
Is there, you know, I hate to say this, but if they don't know about it or don't understand the consequences, how is this going to be dealt with? Like, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of confusion about what to do.
I think, you know, most people know because people have been calling and asking. So I think most people know they can't just ignore a court date.
I hope so.
We're trying, you know, to be a little lenient about it. I mean, the main thing is that if they don't come, then the sheriff is going to go out to serve them. And, you know, a lot of people don't like a sheriff's car pulling up to their house and, you know, people saying, why were they? I mean, so to avoid all that, all you have to do is come down and get your service.
Right.
Otherwise, the sheriff is going to go out and have to look for you.
Right.
And not to mention the manpower that it's going to take, you know, from our sheriff's office to do that. So we're hoping that people who missed because it was closed will voluntarily come. Now, those that are missing now that we're open, those people will have bench warrants because that we're opened now. And if they don't appear, then, you know, they don't have the excuse the court wasn't open. However, we are holding our bench warrants for a few days because some people, like you said, are confused. And we want them to have time to realize that the court is opened, although it's been widely advertised that it is.
Right.
So we're going to give them a little bit of leeway, but, you know, not forever, because these people, everybody was personally served and they were told to come, and we are open now. And so this week, most of the people have been coming, but some have not.
I understand. So you've got people that need to catch up with their bench warrants, et cetera. Now, what about all the jury trials that were scheduled, you know, from that March 20th to May 18th? Is everything just backed up now, whether it's civil or criminal? How is the rest of the year going to unfold?
Well,
with limited, I know that it's not going to open up for jury trials until July 1st, hopefully. But how do you make up for all this lost time?
Well, from the civil end, we're resetting them on the later civil weeks that we have. So I would say most of those people have gotten new trial dates that are later in the year for civil cases. On the criminal end, what we're trying to do is because, you know, we have to spread those out. There are more criminal trials set every week than there are civil. And so we're having to spread those out. But most of them are just being reset for later in the fall. Now, we don't know yet exactly how effective we're going to be in getting juries together, and, you know, right after the first time that we're allowed to have them. And so some of it may be based on, you know, really juror participation, because we don't want to be in a situation where people come and they feel they're, you know, that they don't feel safe. But I will say this, that when we do reopen for jury trials, we are going to limit the size of the pool. So you're not going to be coming into a room with 100 people. We're going to have flights of people coming in to be interviewed for, you know, for jury service. So we're not going to get everybody all like we would normally do if this hadn't happened. You know, normally when you called, I don't know if you've ever been in jury pool, but
well, I have,
you
know, in St. Landry Parish, it was like 100, 200 people.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're not going to be doing that. It will definitely be in smaller amounts. Mm-hmm. And because, of the space needed to place people apart, it's going to be difficult to accommodate many jury trials every week, because we have only a few courtrooms that are very large that
enough,
can accommodate that. And so, you know, it's just going to, we're going to have to kind of wait and see, but it's going to be a while before we can catch up, because we're just limited by the size of our facilities and the number of people that we could have with these restrictions. Mm-hmm. And so, and you know, until we hit that point where there's either a vaccine or an effective treatment, we're just going to be in a different mode. And we're, you know, we're trying to stay a little bit ahead of it and not to fall too far behind, but we are constrained by what, you know, what happens in terms of what the governor's orders are, what the Supreme Court orders are, and then just what the public is feeling comfortable with.
So if a jury is held and it's a jury of your peers of 12 people, they probably won't fit in the traditional jury box, right?
Right. Because even now what we're doing for the people that are coming in, and what we're doing is we sort of have a triage system. People that are on the docket in the morning, when they come up to check in, which is outside of the courthouse, some of them, there will be a notation that they are just to be served with a new date. And those would be the cases where the lawyers have talked and the case can't be resolved. And obviously we can't have a jury trial, so we're just going to reset them. And then we have other people that, their case may be able to be resolved in the criminal realm because they may have a plea worked out, or there may be something. And so those people will wait in a, we have outdoor tents, they wait, their lawyers will come and talk to them. And if something is resolved, then they come up. So we're only bringing a few people at a time into the courtroom, but the courtrooms have all been prepared for this. We have X marks put where everybody is allowed to sit, and there, that means that somebody, there's nobody within a 6-foot radius of you. So, you know, some people are allowed to sit in the jury box, but not that many, because they for that 6-foot radius.
Right.
And so we have a very small capacity of each courtroom being utilized. And that's how we're working it now. And so when somebody actually comes in, of course, everybody that comes to the courthouse has to wear a mask.
Do you provide the mask, or do they have to bring
it? If they do not come, well, we encourage them to bring one because we have a limited supply.
It's hard,
but if
to
they
find
have to,
them. Yeah.
Yeah. But if we have, if they have to come in, we, emergency preparedness has given us a limited supply of the disposable surgical mask, and so we have those available if they don't have one. But yeah, everyone has to wear a mask. They all have to observe the 6-foot distancing. Mm-hmm. Everybody is required when they enter the courtroom to sanitize their hands, and whenever a group leaves, you have a cleaning crew that comes in behind that group and sanitizes before the next group.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Gosh. Yeah. What is happening to prescription? And so for non-lawyers, you know, there's deadlines where you have to answer, file things, have a court proceeding or whatever. I guess the clerk of court, Louis Pratt, is still accepting lawsuits.
Well, you know, what happens is the governor's order suspended prescription until June 5th. So prescription has been suspended, which means that somebody can't take a default judgment against you, or the delays that you have for answering, you know, or suspended. But it doesn't mean that you never have to answer. So for instance, if your deadline to file a lawsuit fell on, say April 15th, well, this order, I think, went into effect on March 16th. So then you would have
so many
an extra
days.
30 days because it was suspended after the thing was lifted to do it. So it was suspended starting in on March 16th or whatever the date was. I think it was March 16th. It was suspended starting that date. And so you have that many days left once it's lifted. So that's what people have to pay attention to, is that it's not suspended indefinitely. You just have whatever was remaining on your time at the time that the governor issued his order.
Right.
So for instance, right now, no default judgments have been entered since this went into effect. And they will not be until after the governor's order on suspension is lifted, and then the delays will start to run.
Okay. Marilyn, you know, I should have done this earlier. I'd like to pause for a moment for Discover Lafayette's Past. And I didn't tell you about this, but we do this in every episode. Mm-hmm. It's sponsored by Rally Marketing, a full-service digital marketing agency that can assist people with marketing automation, content development, and strategy on how to use social media to turn into a moneymaker for their business. Our friends at Rally Marketing are there to help you navigate the maze of all the latest ways to market online effectively. Please visit rallymarketing.com for more information. And you might be interested in this. For today's moment, I wanted to focus on the origins of Lafayette Parish's courthouse and how it ended up in downtown Lafayette, where it is now. In January of 1823, the Louisiana legislature carved Lafayette Parish out of the western portion of St. Martin Parish. At that time, there was already a jail building close to the river on Pinhook, which was an outpost settlement of what was then called Vermilionville. John and William Reeves owned land adjacent to the outpost on the river and donated land for the purpose of building the parish courthouse and other parish seat buildings. However, 5 months later, Jean Mouton convinced the Louisiana legislature to direct the parish citizens to hold an election that would choose a place for Lafayette Parish's courthouse building, resulting in a contest between the Reeves plot and the Mouton plot. Mouton won the election, and on September 20th, 1824, Jean Mouton donated the land where the Lafayette Parish Courthouse is currently located. Now, the parish did maintain the jail at the river on Pinhook until 1827, and then it was moved to the current Main Street property. And so the rest is history. The village of Vermilionville, which is now the city of Lafayette, grew up around the Lafayette Parish Courthouse, where you work, Marilyn, and also St. John Catholic Church, both on land donated by Jean Mouton. So thank you for letting me take a break. I'm trying to share with people, you know, our current stories and kind of put it in perspective about past. And so where you work has really been the place where our city grew and was built. So thank you for your service. So,
well, and I think that the current courthouse is the fourth one to be
it
on
is.
That same plot. Yeah.
And it's not in good shape. Can we get that in?
No, it's not.
It is not in good shape, but I'm sure you would like to see mm-hmm. changes. And that was built, what, 40-something years ago, maybe almost 50?
Yeah, I think it was over 50 years ago.
Yeah, and it's in bad shape. The prior courthouse was beautiful. And it was raised, it was torn down, and the current courthouse was built. And now we've got some serious issues with how to pay for, you know, a safe place for our public and for our judges and clerk of court staff to work in. So that's probably another podcast.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I had some more questions on the prescription. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I don't know how many... I know you handle like emergency procedures right now, but if people are getting divorced and they have to be separated apart, let's say for 6 months or whatever it is under the law, are those timelines suspended too, or is that separate if you can do an affidavit and say we lived separate and apart for this long, even though we couldn't get into court? You know what I'm saying? Like, is that also suspended? Or?
Well, I mean, you know, under the law, if you have no minor children, you have to live separate and apart for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And so if you've lived separate and apart for 6 months, then you can file and get an immediate divorce.
It doesn't matter. I mean, about this prescription issue. Okay.
No. And if you have minor children, then it's you know, you have to live separate and apart for 365 days. Mm-hmm. So you know, and that wouldn't change.
Okay.
You know, that part of it doesn't change.
No. Okay. I was just curious.
But it's just that you couldn't, if you were suing someone for divorce and they had to answer, they don't have to answer until this delay is lifted. So you couldn't come in and, for instance, obtain a divorce without giving the person time to answer. But if you're talking about just counting the days to be entitled to it,
that law,
it wouldn't matter.
Yeah. Applies. How do you think you're having to deal with things? I know you tell me you're doing a lot of Zoom conferences and webinars. You're doing things online like the rest of us. Do you think that this pandemic, that there might be some good things coming out of it? Do you think it might teach us all how to streamline how we operate? What is your experience in this so far?
Yeah, I think it is good. I think it has forced us to embrace technology more than, you know, maybe we were thinking it was going
to
work, and it has.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing is that I think that it may cause some laws to be changed, because right now we have laws in place that allow us to do certain things in criminal cases by video, but it doesn't allow us to do others. And that, there's probably no reason for that anymore because of the advances that have been made in this technology and the ability of everybody to participate, you know, with really not very, I mean, it's not very much different than when you're in court. Everybody is completely seeing each other and hearing each other,
right,
and, you know, looking at each other. So I think that it will maybe help to convince our legislature that they can loosen that up a little bit and give us more opportunity to do that. Because, you know, oftentimes, for instance, on our criminal dockets, we have people that are set for court that are being held in facilities outside of the parish, mm-hmm. some all the way up in Monroe, maybe.
It's hard to get them here safe.
Well, you know, it's the cost of transporting people to court. And sometimes they come and, you know, they sit here all day, and what we needed them for maybe took, you know, 10 minutes. So,
right.
But we had to bring them because they're not allowed to do this, mm-hmm. you know, to have this certain kind of hearing by video. So I think that is probably going to be a big help. And, you know, I think also in the civil realm, it's funny, when we first started calling people in civil matters and saying, we're going to hear your matter by video, a lot of them were not wanting to do it.
My husband,
of course,
doesn't like that. He likes to see you in person.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court had said, and I think the rule was up until, you know, Monday, that you have to do it by video unless mm-hmm. you have a good reason not to. Now they're just saying that they are encouraging it unless, you know, mm-hmm. unless it can't effectively be done. But I don't see, I mean, I've done a lot of them now, and I don't really see any difference at all in being on Zoom or being in the courtroom. And in fact, one of the good things about being in Zoom is that you're actually closer to the person speaking in terms of seeing their face than when we're in a courtroom,
know.
You know?
Right.
So I really like it. And I, you know, most of the lawyers that have done it have said,
good.
Surprising that they liked it. So I think people may start to do that. And, you know, when you think about it, you have lawyers from out of town, New Orleans or Baton Rouge. They drive all the way in mm-hmm. for a 15-minute hearing. And, you
that's
know,
like a whole
it would,
day.
Yes, yeah. And it would make sense to be able to just do it by video. So, you know, that time. And the same thing, lawyers from Lafayette sometimes have to go to Baton Rouge or New Orleans. If they could do it by video, mm-hmm. they wouldn't have to waste that time. So
right.
I'm hoping that it will kind of make people realize that there's as much participation by video as there are if you're there in
right.
person.
And I looked on the Clerk of Court, Lewis Perrett's website. I'm sure it's the same statewide and nationally and probably internationally, but now they're accepting, you know, email filings, like an internet mm-hmm. filing
right.
on civil matters, like whether it's a land purchase or whatever. So I'm hoping, as sad as this has been, that perhaps we can learn how to be better stewards of our time and of our resources, you know, to save the courthouse money, to save litigants money. And I was just curious what you thought. Would that be something that the Louisiana Law Institute would have to study, or is this something that could just be brought up?
I mean, right now in the federal system, they only accept electronic filing.
Oh.
And they have a PACER system, which is, you know, their system. Mm-hmm. But we are nearing that, because I think probably by the end of this year, Lafayette Parish is only going to accept electronic filings. I don't think they're going to accept paper filings anymore, because right now they are trying to convert over to that, but many people, you know, don't want to get on the system. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, I think they're only going to accept it. And so for people that are like representing themselves and they feel like they don't have the equipment to, there will be kiosks in the courthouse where you can come and do it from here. But they need to quit dealing with so much paper. And, you know, one of the good things about that is that so much of space that's used up is storing paper records, and we don't need to do that anymore. Right. And so the idea is that we will not have, other than original mortgages and plats, which I think will continue to always be the original paper record will be preserved. Other than that, I think everything will be electronic, and it will be more efficient.
Yeah. You know, I can see, though, the benefits of having a cloud-based service, because if you do have a flood or the pipes break mm-hmm. in the courthouse, mm-hmm. you don't want to just be relying on paper. You want to have a backup. So I'm hoping this happens. And I know it costs money for our parish, for our clerk, for our judges to make a transition. But I want to commend you on what you're doing and your service to our community. Did I ask you what you thought I would ask, or were there things you were thinking we would have talked about that I didn't bring up?
No, I think it's good. And like I said, I appreciate the opportunity to let people know about, you know, what we're doing down here. And, you know, the other thing that I would like to say is that this is going to be an evolving process. Mm-hmm. And so every order that comes down in terms of what phases we move into and how we can adapt, we're going to, you know, try to follow that. And so I hope that people will continue to pay attention if they have business with the court, so that they are aware of what they can do. For instance, right now, people that have business with the clerk of court can do that business with the clerk of court, whereas up until Monday, they could not do it in person. So, you know, things are opening back up, but, you know, we're going to, my understanding is that the clerk of court has started as of Monday doing marriage licenses again, which they had not done during all the shutdown. But they are not yet giving out birth certificates and death certificates.
What's that?
And I think it has to do with the fact that he is doing a skeleton crew.
Okay.
He doesn't want to have all of his employees at one time. Mm-hmm. So he's doing shifts. And I think it's relating to that is the reason they're not doing it, because they don't have full manpower every day. But I, you know, that will change. That will evolve too. So people just need to kind of pay attention. And we try to get the information out. Uh-huh. You know, as we change how we're doing things, so that people, you know, are aware of it. And, you know, hopefully we're all hoping that, you know, before too long, we'll be back to normal, but, you know, it's not in our control.
Although you just triggered a memory of mine when we spoke last week, you'll be back to normal, hopefully soon, you know, this year. Mm-hmm. And yet this is an election year, and there's going to be 5 new judges.
Yes. Well, yes.
You can't comment on the people, but
that's true.
That's a big change.
It will be a big. This is the biggest change. I mean, since I've been a judge, and I've been a judge now, this is my 22nd year. This is the biggest turnover that we're having because of judges either retiring or seeking other positions, mm-hmm. and so it is going to be, you know, very interesting, because there's this institutional knowledge that goes with having served, and I'm sure whoever is elected will do, you know, do fine, but it will be a big transition at one time to have that many new judges. So I feel badly for those new ones that are coming in, because, you know, they're coming in at a time when
jumping into the firing pan.
Yeah. When things are, you know, are going to be hectic, and everybody's going to be trying to catch up from what we weren't able to do this summer. But those of us that are hopefully staying on will help them, and hopefully very shortly they'll be up to speed too. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting time for us.
Are you in the middle of your term?
No, we all judges are up for re-election in the fall.
Okay.
So we all have to requalify and run. Our terms all go together.
I see.
So, but you know, a number
but
of us
are retiring.
Some are retiring, but a number of us are going to stand for re-election. So we'll have some of us left, hopefully, and we'll have a crop of new ones too.
Yeah. Well, best wishes to you in the upcoming year, Marilyn Castle, and I want to thank you for your service. I want to thank you for your friendship. You're a dear person in our community. So thank you for taking time today. And I'd also like to thank, before we close, the service of Raider and Jason Sikora that mixes our podcast. Marilyn, as I told you, I'm taping this from home, and Jason will mix it from Raider, and then it helps me sound more professional as I've had to learn how to do this from my home. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Iberia Bank, Lafayette General Health, and Raleigh Marketing for their services in making this podcast possible. Please visit discoverlafayette.net, or even better, or in addition, subscribe to the Discover Lafayette podcast, which you can get on your phone. And we thank you for listening. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.